KYW News Radio Original Podcasts. From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Merkel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. The founder of the nonprofit Heroic Gardens says not everything has to be treated with a pill. The mental health organization in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania, is dedicated to veterans by using horticulture as a form of healing. Why is working with plants powerful for veterans' mental health? Colleen Turner joins us to discuss the organization and its programs, along with a U.S. Navy veteran who says Heroic Gardens helped to change their life.
It's just been an amazing transformation to begin to feel connected to other people and to the earth in that way.
Charity Howard visits the House of Magic.
We can take, you know, adults and bring them back to their childhood.
All that's coming up on Bridging Philly. Heroic Gardens is a mental health organization based in Elkins Park, PA, dedicated solely to veterans. Their goal is to introduce and surround veterans with horticulture as a form of personal healing. As they like to say, not everything has to be treated with a pill. It was founded by Colleen Turner, who just happens to be a KYW News Radio 2025 Game Changer awardee. And we wanted to catch up with Colleen and Heroic Gardens to learn more about what they've been doing as their service to area veterans continues to grow. Colleen joins us now along with U.S. Navy veteran Salome Hall. Welcome to Bridging Philly.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
All right. Excited to find out what Heroic Gardens has been getting into. But Colleen, let's first get into this story, the founding story of Heroic Gardens. What led you to start this?
I was actually raised in a family that gardened. So not only agriculture, but horticulture. So it was like a natural, normal thing to have plants and vegetables and herbs and access to all of that. And my grandfather was actually a medic in World War II. He was Army. And my dad is a Navy veteran. So I've been raised with the understanding that the veteran community is a big part of our neighborhood and community fabric. So this was something I wanted to do. I didn't, you know, I could always make a donation to another organization, but I knew how good working with plants made me feel. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, I wonder if I could give back to the veteran community. But you know what? I sat on it for maybe 10 years because I was afraid. And it wasn't until 2018 that I was at a crossroads and I thought, you know what? If not now, when? So as I always say to people when they're like, should I do this? I'm like, just press the button because what's the worst thing that can happen, right?
Right.
We started in 2018. So we're going to be 8 years old this year. 2 years ago, I decided to go full time and we're not looking back. To date, I think we have served over 4,900 veterans and their families. We've offered over 30,000 hours of free horticultural therapy programming to veterans. We have this virtual program that has about 105 veteran registrants as far as Alaska and Hawaii that meets monthly. And of course, last year we were talking when we met about this sunflower farm in Upper Holmesburg section of Northeast Philly. And we are excited to wake that farm up and bring it back this year for everybody.
I can't wait to hear about all of the different projects that you have going on throughout Pennsylvania. Colleen, but I'm really interested in talking about how you put together horticulture with veterans and mental health. Like, how did you put those together and realize that if you started this, this could help the mental health of our veterans?
Well, thank you for asking that because, like I said, you know, I was out in my own garden and I knew how great I felt. I didn't know that there was actually proven science behind this. Mm. So imagine, like, my head exploded when I found out there was actually a horticultural therapy certificate program at Temple University. There's also one at Del Valle College and at Rutgers, for anybody that's interested. And it really uncovered, like, it validated how I felt, right? Like, if I was stressed during work or whatever, I would go out in my garden and, like, get out of my head.
Mm.
So it just became this opportunity to say, wow, you know, study the population in the class and start to really understand something that I can't understand as a civilian, you know, what we call the invisible wounds of war.
Yeah.
How working with plants can actually help with, you know, conditions related to PTSD, anxiety, stress, and in the same vein, improve things like cognitive ability, self-esteem, bone strength. So we're talking not only about mental health, but we're talking about physical as well.
Wow. So plants, I mean, who knew that gardening and being out in nature and things of that nature would really improve mental health? Like you said, you used to do that just to get out of your own head. The first veteran that came on board to participate in this, do you remember that? The first veteran that got on board and said, wait a minute, this really works.
I sure do, because he's now the president of JDOG. His name's Tom Stark. He's an Army veteran.
Okay.
We were working on a project for an Army veteran in Roslyn, Pennsylvania. We were doing a land transformation. And this was her childhood home, by the way. And she wanted to recreate the vegetable garden that her father had built in the backyard when she was a child. But she had a lot of things from Hurricane Sandy that needed to be cleared out. And I called JDOG because we try to hire veteran companies whenever we need to source out.
And what is JDOG, by the way?
JDOG is a junk removal company. It's national.
Oh,
and
okay.
If you are a veteran or a family member of a veteran, you can buy a franchise.
Got
and
it.
Be connected to them. So they're amazing. And I called them to say, can you come out and help us with this? And here comes Tom Stark, and what was a 2-minute phone conversation, you know, when he showed up, ended up being a couple of hours. And like that, he started to come out and volunteer. And, you know, as a civilian, I'll be honest with you, year one was not very promising because I'm not a veteran. And, you know, as I'm sure Salome, you will attest to this, like, they're a very tight-knit group, and they should be. But, you know, civilians need to prove that we do really see them and we do care about them.
Yeah.
And they are one of our most valuable resources and assets. And so in year one, we didn't get any phone calls. But year two, you know, we just kept showing up, right? And that's one of our values is like consistency, all-inclusiveness, safety. And because of that, that's where we've seen the growth.
Excellent, excellent. And all of that is needed for healing. Salome, talk to us about how you got connected with Kali and Heroic Gardens.
So I'm not a Philly native. I moved here during the pandemic in 2020. And not knowing really anyone here, the first thing I thought of was finding veteran groups that would be a way to sort of connect and find people that at least I knew I had one thing in common with. And then we could move on from there. Mm-hmm. And I found Heroic Gardens just in a Google search. And I was interested in the yard transformation, but I was so hesitant to sign up because growing up in Brooklyn, I had no idea what I was doing. So I came into it with a lot of hesitancy because I didn't have any personal connection to plant life. And I joined the 10-week course and got used to calling what I used to call dirt soil
right.
And remembering to not call it dirt and getting used to actually putting my hands in it. The first week I came with not just gardening gloves, but with rubber gloves that I put on underneath them because I didn't want to get my hands dirty. And it's just been an amazing transformation to begin to feel connected to other people and to the earth in that way. It creates an environment that is conducive for healing.
Yeah, yeah. I love that you differentiate the terms dirt and soil. I'm never going to hear the two words the same way again or use them the same way. So were you looking for any type of camaraderie and healing for anything that you experienced during your service or anything like that? What were you looking for, or actually, what did you find that helped you when you got involved with Heroic Gardens?
It wasn't my first instinct to want to join a veterans group. I actually had actively shunned my service. I was ashamed of some of the things that I contributed to as a member of the military. I was ashamed about the environmental harm that we'd caused. I was ashamed about some of my experiences, including military sexual violence. Okay. And so generally, I wouldn't even tell people I was a veteran. The only time I might pop out is to get like my free meals on Veterans Day. Just, but I didn't have anybody else when we got here. It was just me and my husband and our dog.
Yeah.
And I knew through COVID, we were already very isolated. And this was the only group of people I did have a connection to. And the idea of it being through plants, it didn't feel like it was going to be entirely about trauma, or it wasn't going to be entirely about the same like 10 principles that the VA always spits out at you about, you know, how to be a more healthy person. Like, I wanted to have a little bit of a break from that structured narrative.
Yeah.
And I thought that just having something else besides being a veteran as the focus of the class, like the fact that there would be plants involved, would make it a little less stressful. And it was right. I was right. Aside from us just at the beginning of of class, introducing ourselves and telling everyone what branch we were in, it really wasn't something that was a part of our lessons, our time together. It was more about connecting to each other and connecting to the projects that we were working on. Those included everything from making seed bombs to learning how to make aromatherapy items and body scrubs with essential oils to making a Zen gardens. It was an amazing experience to really understand the full breadth of what was possible with plants.
Okay.
And you're a tree tender now too, Salome.
I'm very good at lopping off trees now.
Oh my
Never
gosh.
Would have known I had that skill set.
So many different
and
terms that I'm going to learn.
I didn't even know what lopping was.
Yes, lopping. We have to find out what that is, of course. But, you know, Salome, I appreciate you being so candid and talking about your story. Military sexual violence is very serious, and I'm sorry that you went through that. But talk about how this has helped you. How has it helped you kind of work through that and any other issues?
As mentioned, I'm dealing with PTSD. I also have a chronic injury from my time in the service. So I deal with chronic pain, which really limited me in my functionality and in my ability to be consistent because of I can't really tell when I'm going to be in pain. And I came into a space where none of that mattered. And it was about showing up as much as I could and that was going to be okay. And that's not something I had experienced with a lot of other military people. The idea of like, come as you are and we can actually talk about it wasn't something that I was familiar with. I also grew up in a really strict household. I'm a first generation American. My parents are Pentecostal Christians from the Caribbean. So there's a lot going on there. But I grew up with a really pinned up, strict lifestyle, and the expectations were very high. And I was really hard on myself when we started the class. I was really hard on myself if something didn't work out, if my plants died. And I had to learn to accept that some things just happen and that we don't have control over them. And that's something that I've been able to apply to my life in general, in the way that I approach my personal life and actually starting my own nonprofit and feeling safe enough to even make that leap. And like Kali said, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? I wouldn't have felt that personally if it hadn't been for knowing that things happen, mistakes are made, not even necessarily mistakes, just the course of existence in life happens. And it's not necessarily a reflection of who you are.
Look at what plants are teaching us. I mean, honestly, I see the correlation, and it's really beautiful. And I can see how this is healing. Kali, when you hear a story like Salome's, and I know that's just one of so many stories, you know, how does that make you feel?
Here I am right now. I'm a weeping willow, right? I'm so proud of you, Salome. I'm so proud that you took a chance and you took a chance on us. And I'm so proud of like what you're becoming and where you're going. And that's all we wish for anyone that works with us in the veteran community. I mean, it is a very emotional thing that's happening. And it's always tears of joy, right? It's always tears of joy. Or I always ask people to stop when we're working together and look around. Everyone's smiling.
Yeah. Wow.
And we need that right now more than ever. We need to find a way to continue this emotion, this vibration that we are creating together, because there are many veterans and family members that are in need.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
You know, you can both kind of weigh in on this. I wanted to talk about some of the misconceptions that people have about veterans' mental health. What are some of the misconceptions out there that people have about veterans' mental health that Heroic Gardens kind of helps to correct?
I would just say that a lot of people assume the worst. I'm not necessarily the person to say is the example of that, but not everyone's seeking mental health assistance because they've seen bodies and they've been, you know, in a war setting. There are lots of things that happen to a person in the time that they're serving. Aside from just what we do on our jobs, we are isolated from our families, and that creates familial issues that can have a lasting legacy in how you behave, the way you interact with people. I felt really isolated from my family because of how much life went on, even though I wasn't there. I did two deployments in the Navy, and I would come back and things would be so different. And you just feel like it's suddenly like your life is not important for other people. And that alone is something most military service members will experience, because you're not necessarily with your family. Even if you just go to boot camp, that break can be really traumatizing, especially if something happens while you're away, a major family life shift, a marriage, a death. Those things make a difference. And so don't assume that a veteran is dealing with the worst thing. But don't assume they're not either. It's really important to just be sensitive and not too prying. I've had people ask me, have you ever killed someone? I've had people ask me really inappropriate questions. And those things don't need to be talked about in order for you to learn about who I am. Mm-hmm. And be sensitive about how you speak to a veteran, because you don't know what they've been through.
Yeah, thank you for that, Kali.
I think you bring up a good point, Salome, and that is one thing that we strive to do with our volunteer base is, you know, people, I think, meet a veteran and they don't know how to talk to them, but they're a normal person. They're just like us, right? So, you know, great starter questions. Always ask, when you meet a veteran, ask them what branch they served. Okay, before you thank them for their service, and this is a personal opinion, of course, but, and then ask them what their job was. I was sitting at an American Legion post in Media 2 weeks ago for dinner, and I was sitting with about five or six veterans, and some of them were in the Korean War. They translated codes, Russian codes, for 2 years. Now, to anybody else, right, it's a cute little senior guy sitting next to me, but holy cow. And then the career he went on to have when he got out, like, it's like all of us, you all are having a life. This was a part of it. It's a huge part of why we even have these freedoms and all of the things that we get to have in daily life. That should be celebrated. And, you know, I think like our sunflower farm, one of the biggest aspects we've noticed is we're breaking down those barriers. You're seeing little kids paint rocks with veterans and then hide them in the farm. I mean, they wouldn't know each other otherwise, but we are now starting these relationships where, you know, veterans, once they come back from service, they still want to serve.
Right.
So what better way than to use nature to help them not only with their own self-care, but to continue to care for the community.
Awesome. And yeah, once they come back from service, they absolutely deserve our continued support that they should just be able to get without any questions, of course. But I wanted to actually talk a little bit more about the programs. And how do veterans actually get involved? Typically, how do they come to you?
You know, our top referral sources are peers and the VA. Mm-hmm. And I have had some random questions from Humana. Like, I've gotten people that have called me in Kentucky and said, you know, I was talking with my HMO and they told me there's this program. So it's amazing. I mean, yes, there's Google too, but I love to tell the VA that their coaches are working because their coaches will send people to us. And then we wrap ourselves around them. And that's huge. I mean, it's an honor for us to serve them. And we try to answer every call.
Now, how do you choose the different spaces that you work on? You've worked on so many spaces. How do you actually pick the ones?
Well, it's a great question. I'll tell you a big secret. We've never turned anyone down, but I'm not supposed to say that. We do have an application process. Mm-hmm. We have worked at individual veterans' homes that have applied. And the reason for the application, honestly, we want to know that you're on the same level with us, that right. you either want to be a plant person or you already are. And then we're going to help you, you know, make your dream come true on the outside of your home. But the other places that we've had an opportunity to serve are, you know, local VFWs, memorials, parks, veterans parks, veterans cemeteries. It's all varied. This year, we're actually working at a community garden in Hatfield that's at a church, but a veteran actually runs it. Mm-hmm. And they have a food bank that's the size of the entire church basement. I mean, it looks like a grocery store. Wow. And so for us, it's not only helping the veteran, but knowing that we're helping to feed the community. So we find these things, or they find us, and we figure out the best way we can utilize, you know, that opportunity and turn it into a service output.
Okay. We got to get to the sunflower farm.
Let's go.
This was a big project from what I understand. I know you do so many projects. Some of them are small. Some of them are big. This was a big one. Tell me all about the sunflower farm.
This was a big one. I want to just give a shout out to David Sarlito from Ocean State Job Lot, because he was the one sitting in a diner with me saying, imagine if you could see a field of sunflowers from Google satellite. Like, you just saw yellow.
Wow.
And we had been working actually with New Cortland for several years, providing horticultural therapy to their veterans. And it's their land up in Upper Holmesburg. So they have 32 acres, I believe. It's the former, first of all, it was former World War II housing. And then it became Lindenfield. And then it was knocked down. City owned it. New Cortland bought it. They have big plans for it. But right now, it's just an open space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they said, hey, why don't we give you an acre and let's try this out? So that's what we did last year. And I mean, literally April 4th, by the way, that's our wake up the farm day. Doesn't mean we're going to plant anything yet. But the number of corporate sponsors, whether it was financial or donation of product, mm-hmm. like, and I'm talking 270 cubic yards of compost wow. from Old Castle, or Ocean State Job Lot, who gave us all of our seeds. So those sunflowers came from our friends up in Rhode Island. And I'm telling you, we put in 4,000. They all grew, and wow. Salome, you can attest to this, to about 14, 15 feet high.
What?
Wow. The sunflower heads were 10 pounds. I mean, two people needed to carry this thing to get it into one of our hort therapist's car because nobody could carry it. And it blew us away. People had a connection to this property. Some people, their grandparents lived there. Mm-hmm. Some people, they lived there. People were coming up, hugging us, saying, thank you. We live in this neighborhood. There's been nothing here. Really, we can come after work and just be.
Wow. Yeah.
And simply that is it. And it's hard, I think, for people at this day and age to accept something without a string attached to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, look, I was stalking Facebook Marketplace last summer for furniture. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of cool furniture, and the sunflowers guided us. We put all these pathways in. We used the land to turn it into some interactive activities. And, you know, this year we actually just got electricity. Again, thanks to another community partner, Cobra Electric, who they work with the veteran community a lot. So we're lucky that we found them. We are working on an irrigation system. We're going to have a pumpkin patch. We're hoping to have some movie nights.
Wow.
And we're adding more raised beds because, as I mentioned, we did almost 500 bags of fresh produce, which we gave back to the community. You come to the farm, if something's ripe, take it. But now we want to use it as an education opportunity as well, mm-hmm. right? We know it's a health equity measure, but how can we utilize this to say, hey, do you know what you are about to pick? And do you know how to cook with it? And then we find out, you know, what people like.
Yeah.
You can grow all the vegetables you want in the world, but if nobody likes them, what happens?
True.
So, yeah, we're excited. We are excited to be connected to Upper Holmesburg. I almost forgot. We were the recipients of a mural arts project, Philly Mural Arts.
Oh,
this
wow.
year,
great.
For the 250. So we've been working with this amazing artist through them, who's a veteran. He goes by Zurb. If you've seen any of his work in Kensington, he's like this sick, sick graffiti artist. Like, I have wow. always admired him, but I didn't know who he was. And then I found out he's working on our project. So we're going to be putting metal panels on the fence line. So Torresdale Avenue to draw you in, not only to celebrate the farm, mm-hmm. but to celebrate the 250. And our theme is freedom.
Oh, wow.
All of us need to remember. Like, it's almost like, you know, dusting off the four freedoms that were on the Saturday Night Post and making a 2026 version. What does that look like?
Yeah.
Because it sure isn't that.
Wow. This is awesome. Salome, tell me briefly, you know, when you see a completed project, you know, after, you know, tilling the soil and some other term you used, lobbing, I think, you know, when the project is complete, what's the feeling?
There's a sense of satisfaction, obviously, accomplishment, and a realization of your abilities. Mm. When Kali and the team told me they were going to be coming to transform my yard, I'm actually so surprised at what occurred after that. So they decided that my yard would be done during Navy Week and that there would be sailors to come and also help out mm-hmm. to clear out my yard, to get it ready for the garden beds to go in. And I know what sailors look like. I know like what age they were. I knew what ranks they were going to send out here. So I said, listen, if you guys are sending 19 to 24 year olds out here, can they help some of my elderly neighbors as well? And so what we did was we organized a block cleanup for the same day that they would be doing my yard. And I encouraged my neighbors to come out so we could all see it as a moment to come together as a community and enhance our surroundings. Now my neighbors, every time it starts getting warm, they're like, are you making seed bombs? We now have bees and butterflies in my neighborhood, and there are no trees on my block. So it's been something that actively is bringing more life into my part of Philly. Yeah. And I organized, you know, having the news come out to cover it. I organized having some vendors supply some sandwiches and water ice for the sailors. And that's what made me realize that I had the ability to organize. And that is what led to me starting my own organization.
That's great. That's terrific. And what's the name of your organization?
SAS Project, Sisters Affirming Sisterhood Project. We give away free clothing, toiletry, and cosmetics to trans women. We mm-hmm. teach classes on mending, sewing, hair care, nails, makeup. Those are all gender-affirming skills, mm-hmm. but they're also monetizable. We additionally have creative programming and community programming like balls. We hold fashion events. We were just at New York Fashion Week. And all of this is done with queer and BIPOC creatives in mind.
Look at you. Well, that's wonderful. You just went from one thing and it kind of opened up the door for something else. This is great. Kali, what you guys are doing is just excellent. And I actually have a slight desire to put my hands in soil. Now, I'm like,
yes,
you, Salome.
I knew it would get you eventually.
I'm like you with the gloves and everything, but I'm going to have to take the gloves off and really get in there. But tell us how people can get more information about Heroic Gardens and see the wonderful pictures of the sunflowers and perhaps get involved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you can visit our website, which is heroicgardens.org. And we are on Instagram, either at Heroic Gardens on Facebook, or we also have another Instagram, which is Pennypack Sunflowers, because we are up in the Pennypack region. So visit us there. If you hit any email on the website, all emails go to me. So we're excited and to welcome anyone new. We have jobs for everybody. There is no such thing as, you know, I have a brown thumb, I can't do this. All are invited. Awesome. And this is for everyone.
Okay.
On behalf of the veteran community.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And Salome, how can people find out more about your organization?
They can find us online at sasproject.org. And we're also on Instagram and most platforms as the SAS Project.
All right. Well, like Kali likes to say, not everything has to be treated with a pill. Thank you so much, Kali Turner and Salome Hall from Heroic Gardens. Continued success. You guys are doing great work. Thank you so much for sharing on Bridging Philly.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
Welcome back to Bridging Philly. It's the only space like it in the entire country, and the focus is on all things mystical and magical. It's a museum, but a whole lot more. Let's find out from Shara Day Howard on this latest Shara in the City.
This week on Shara in the City, we are in Glenside, heading to the House of Magic. It's one of those secrets where if you don't know, now you know. And my buddy Mark is going to introduce me to his two buddies, the Three Amigos of Magic, at the House of Magic. It's a museum. It's a place where you can not only get the history of magic, but you can see a pretty cool show. So let's go.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Good. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you for coming. I'm Mark D'Souza, and welcome to the House of Magic. I am the creator and owner, and we have with us Danny Archer and Marty Martin from Smoke and Mirrors Theater. Yeah, this is a 100-year-old bank. We took it and transformed it into the House of Magic, which has many rooms with many different functions and is just an exciting thing to look at and attend shows at.
I tell you, because you pass by, you'd never know. And then you come in, and boy, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, so where we're standing right now, this is the lobby. This is the original lobby of the bank. This is all original marble.
So how did this even come about? Why the House of Magic?
So, well, I've been doing magic for a couple of years, since I was 6 years old. And, Marty is the real lifelong magician. Danny's only been doing it since he was like in his 20s. Marty worked at the magic shop I used to go to when I was a kid. He was behind the counter.
Get out, Marty. So it's been a while, man.
Yeah, well, Mark and I met Mark when he was 14 years old. So I ran a magic shop in King of Prussia Plaza when they first built King of Prussia Plaza. And magicians from all over the world came just to be in this little magic shop in King of Prussia.
So this was a long time in the making.
Yes. The theater came about in a very unusual way because Danny Archer, and talked to him a little bit too, and he said, Marty, what do you think of the idea of a magic theater? I thought for about 30 seconds. I said, you know what? That's a good idea. Go find a building.
Insert Danny.
That's the truth. So we decided, I had been performing overseas, and in Germany they had all these little theaters in different cities, and that got me thinking about a theater. Marty and I had lunch, and then we found the space, and we opened up the Smoke and Mirrors Magic Theater on August 17th of 2017. One day we got a call from Mark saying, hey, my lifelong dream was to be able to have my collection and everything, a spot with everything under one building. Would you and Marty consider moving the Smoke and Mirrors Theater over here? It took us about 30 seconds to look at each other and say, yes, we will do that. And we did our first show here on April 4th. So we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary.
So happy anniversary, guys.
Yeah.
It's really a great venture because we're all very long time friends, such magic enthusiasts. I started when I was 12. He started when he was about 6. You say, hey, I still love magic the same as I did when I was a 12-year-old. Wow. It's pretty amazing for all of us.
Yeah, love sticks. The Three Amigos. Yeah. I mean, natural fit. Yeah, this is really natural progression. Yeah, guys, tell me, what's in here?
It's an amazing building in amazing condition. So we're walking in right now into the Johnny Thompson Theater. Johnny Thompson was one of the great magicians of the 20th century.
Oh, and these colorful posters.
Yeah, so these are the posters that are in here throughout the building. Some of them are 100 years old. This is just like amazing stuff. In this theater, what I wanted to achieve was a multi-purpose theater where magicians of all different types can come in and present a show here that could be seen from every seat in the house. Amazing state-of-the-art lighting, sound, and video. So what's amazing is we have guys that present what we call close-up magic, which is, you know, magic at the table with cards and coins. Mm-hmm. Every seat in the house, you can see the table that's front and center here. Right behind them, there's a drop-down screen, and we have a rear projection video system. You know, we've got guys that, you know, present shows in casinos, theaters, you know, here and abroad, cruise ship performers.
So these are professionals. These aren't your backyard buddies.
No, these are the best professionals from all over the world.
Let's talk about magic in general. What is that thing that draws you? You know, what sparked the passion?
It's amazing. I remember when I was 5.5 years old, I saw my first magician at a friend's birthday party, and I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And I said, this is what I have to do.
What is magic to you?
Magic is just amazement, the ability to take people and create a sense of wonder. We can take, you know, adults and bring them back to their childhood and make people forget about the reality of today, you know, the hour and a half that they're here, take them into another place.
Suspension of disbelief.
If you suspend your disbelief, then magic's real. So the other thing is there are what we call illusion acts. When we talk about illusions, we're not talking optical illusions. We're talking about the big box stuff where you do tricks with the, you know, large animals and people and, you know.
How many aspects of magic are there? Like, when people think of magic, like, what are the schools of magic?
So we talk about what's called close-up magic, as it describes stuff with small objects on a table. We have parlor magic, which is a little larger, maybe for an audience of 50, 80 people. You have stage magic, which you would see, you know, on a theater stage, or you would see on a cruise ship. And then you have the illusions, the stage illusions, which, you know, you see on the largest stages or even in stadiums, in arenas. But then there's also, this is the sleight of hand with cards, coins, you know, cigarettes, thimbles, you know, just small objects, but on a big stage. And then mentalism, which is mind reading stuff. And we get all of those disciplines right here.
Love it.
Dude, we're going to step through here because we have another theater, the Fred Capps Theater. That's picture of Fred Capps right there. That was a gift from David.
You can actually see the Art Deco in this space.
We do private shows in here and the gallery out here. These are all magic posters. Again, some of them over a century old.
With accents of gold. And there's a huge vault. Yeah. You walk by, guys, and there's this huge vault.
This is the Vault of Secrets. This is the original bank vault. But there's 2,000 safe deposit boxes. And when we're done, each one of them will have magic tricks in them.
Oh, stop.
So as part of some of the close-up shows, if the performer chooses to do it, they'll have a number chosen. And then that person will get the key to that numbered box. They'll open up, bring it in, and the magician has to do the trick that's in that box.
Oh, God, you're blowing my mind. This is amazing. It's that magic. Vault, definitely, I tell you, that did not disappoint.
No, it does not. And people say, oh, you're going to escape from the vault? And no, we're not going to escape from the vault.
All right, downstairs we go.
Downstairs. Let's take the elevator down. It's the world's slowest elevator.
So here we are.
This is the Magic Museum. This is one of the largest privately held collections of magic apparatus, costuming, memorabilia. This is, we call the J. Marshall Room. This is the party room. We're able to have private parties here where we can seat up to 80 people for a sit-down dinner.
This is amazing. And the art, I tell you, the accent on that syllable.
In these glass cases here are magic props from, you know, over the last, actually some of them, dating back to the late 1800s. Ugh. There are props here, amazing illusions that were owned by illustrious people like Doug Henning, Dennis Haney. We have here what we call the Hall of Fame rooms, focused displays from over 100 years. The costumes, people like the amazing Kreskin, we have his costumes.
Hey, you gotta have the magic costume. Yeah. I mean, that's half the show, right?
And the props, Harry Blackstone Jr., things that you will never see anywhere else, but if you come here. We also have the Houdini Room, where we've got Houdini artifacts.
You knew that was my next question.
We have pieces that were made from wood that came out of Houdini's last residence in New York.
You can even feel his presence in here almost.
Yeah, there's the trunk.
The true story of Houdini. Now, he didn't die the way we all think he died.
No, he did not die in the water torture cell like you saw in the Tony Curtis movie.
So what had happened?
So in actuality, he had already had a problem with his appendix. He was a super strong guy. He could have the strongest man in the world punch him in the stomach, and it would not affect him. Well, he was laying down between shows. He already was not feeling well. But there was a guy there who said, I can hit you in the stomach. He goes, yeah. As he gets up, the guy hits him in the stomach, and he wasn't braced for it. And that ruptured the appendix.
Oh,
and hours later, when he was doing the show, that he really felt the ill effects of it. So they took him to the hospital. It was too late. They could do nothing to save him. He was alive for about 3 days. Died on October 31st, 1926.
So
it's 99 years. So next year, you know, this year we had the official Houdini seance here, 99th anniversary of Houdini's passing. There's going to be a
tribute.
Thing. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, guys, he went to a bookshelf and did the old school, pulled a book, and then the bookshelf opens up and the door, and you walk into this huge, beautiful library.
Yeah, so it's like over 30 feet long, 11 foot high library ladders, one of the largest privately held collection of magic books and manuscripts and magazines in the country. Magicians come from all over the world. They come here looking for secrets.
I love it. So, if you want a little magic in your life, how do they do it?
We're currently offering regular shows on Friday and Saturday nights, plus a family show Saturday afternoon, and we're going to begin giving tours. So if you go to our website, houseofmagicpa.com or smokeandmirrorstheater.com, you'll be able to get information on the shows and tickets and the tours.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. For more information on Bridging Philly, follow KYW News Radio on social media. And if you have any ideas for interesting features that you'd like to share, feel free to get in touch with us at bridgingphilly@kywnewsradio.com. For Sharaday Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.